Welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show. This podcast is sponsored by the Growth Platform Framework. B2B FinTech startups accelerate customer acquisition and set up business operations to scale systematically. When you're ready to grow, reach out to us at richard@ipractitioners.com. Now, over to the show with Richard Dozy, founder and host. Hey, what's up, everyone? Today on the show, we have Ignacio and Hassan, co-founders of Hubook out in Spain. Hey, guys, great to have you on the show. How's everything going today?
Hello, hello. Thank you very much for having us here. It's a pleasure. We're doing good. We're doing good. Sunny today in Barcelona. How is it over there?
Yeah, nice. I mean, yeah, not too bad over in London, but you know what London's like. You never quite can work out what to sort of wear. But hey, that's the way it goes. Let's kick off the show with you guys. Telling us a bit about yourselves.
Sure. Well, my name is Ignacio. I'm co-founder of Hubook. I have a background of a strategy consultant. I worked previously for PwC and KPMG. And I met my co-founder Hassan 5 years ago already, and we quickly find out that we were both quite geeks regarding fintech, and kind of he asked me to join forces and try to develop different ideas around a fintech ecosystem. I guess that was kind of the beginning, right, Hassan?
Yeah. So hi, thank you for having us, Richard. So my name is Hassan. I'm the other co-founder of Hubook. My background is product and IT. That's what I do inside Hubook as well. Along with Ignacio. So yeah, the whole idea of launching finance products actually started with a different product eventually, and we started going into market like 3 years ago. We have done multiple products so far. This is kind of like the fifth version which we are doing right now. We've launched 2 products before, they're live, so yeah, all good.
Oh, cool. Sounds like you guys are on the right path to something. But tell me, I mean, you guys, Ignacio, you've worked in consulting previously, obviously at some of the big guys. Hassan, you've worked into the product development world. What made you make the leap over to join forces and start a company?
So the whole idea so my background is working for companies where I worked for startups, and obviously 12 plus years of experience, more than a decade. So one of the major names inside where I worked was Rocket Internet. It's based in Berlin. It's a venture now a venture capital, but it used to be a venture builder. It's the force behind a lot of different companies like Zalando and in Europe and Namshi and Lazada and Jumia in Africa, all of these big companies, and Just Eat and all of these companies. What we realized over there, or learned, I think, over there was there's always these 3 different profiles, you know, the business profile, the product profile, and the marketing or the business development sales profile. So you always need this kind of a mix in the founding team to actually deliver a product and a solution in the market and actually build a business later on top of it. So that's where, when I was thinking about the idea of the first fintech, I was like, okay, who in my network I know and trust more, and who would be, you know, a good fit in this case. So I shared the idea with Ignacio, as he's coming from strategy. So we complement each other on that side.
And how about yourself, Ignacio? Well, why did you make the leap over the fence and move from, which is quite a, you know, prestigious, you know, world in, you know, KPMG, PwC, you mentioned, yeah, and decide to become a founder with Hassan?
Yeah. Well, the prestige is something really that depends on I guess, that you as a person and how do you want to deal with your life, right? In any case, as a consultant, and that's something that it's kind of a feeling that the majority of consultants we tend to have at one time in our career is that we switch from customer to another one. We change a project to a different project. So it's always really exciting to help customers on, you know, solving problems together with them. But then also you have the feeling that you are not neither taking the decisions or implementing the solution. You're always in the advisory side, where you design the strategy, you come up with the structure, and you analyze market dynamics, benchmarks, and you run your analysis. But once you deliver the project, you are done, right? You do not have this follow-up with the customer where you see that what's the impact behind what you come up with, and you cannot neither take a decision on you know, maybe what scenario could be the best. So the fact that sometimes as a consultant, you talk to yourself, maybe I would like to jump the fence and become more decision taker, and I would like to see how the project is implemented, and then let's assess an outcome, and then create a new project. That's something that I was maybe looking for, and definitely something that I've been doing for the last year with Hassan, because the startup is the opposite of that, right? It's basically operation, delivery, and you know, implementation. So that was a little bit also why I transitioned into that, because I was seeking for taking those decisions and being able to implement them, and you know, do that that type of approach.
Yeah, I mean, you touched on a few really good points there. I know a lot of people have a grand vision sometimes when they work in large organizations to set off on their own path, and they do try, and sometimes that they go off, and sometimes they're successful, other times they're not successful. And when they're not successful, they decide to, okay, well, go back to the corporate job because, you know, that's where maybe the easiest route, but that's where the familiarity is in getting another gig and another paycheck. You guys have obviously, to coin a phrase, struck gold and bludgeoning down a path of success. What's been your secret staying on that path and not getting the urge to jump back into that corporate environment?
I think it's very related to also personality and what do you want to do with your next month of life, because it really it for us is kind of an easy answer, because it feels right, the fact that we are working at Hubook, and that feeling that it feels right, that we are pushing things forward, we are gaining traction, customers are getting good feedback, we can establish good bonds with customer to develop the product further. That is something that it could be difficult to achieve within a corporation, where sometimes you are way far away from your customer. And here for us as engineers and people that, you know, we really like to develop and implement and test, it's an exercise to being in a startup that we could not find it somewhere else. So at the end, on my side, that's maybe there is not a secret thing. It's just that we are more willing to work in this kind of environment personally, rather than in a different environment, which can also, you know, help you develop as a professional. But at this moment, we just feel that it's right to be close with the customer and innovate around fintech, right? Something difficult that you cannot do with you are in a more corporate environment, less agile, etc.
Cool. And what about yourself, Hassan? I mean, did you have anything to maybe add to that? Or
let's say, you know, startup is hard. That is like very, very true. What keeps us running, I guess, or anybody running, is the belief in an idea, or at least in a path, and which gets proved day by day once you have product traction. And I think the biggest part of all of this to sustain it is perseverance. It takes a lot of big effort to do it. And that's why a lot of startups stop at some point, or people stop at some point, is that you have to love what you do, first of all. You know, if not, then you cannot do those 18-hour days sustained for a very, very long time. You need to be really interested in what you're doing, because you learn every day, right? So just to give you an idea, when we say this is our fifth product or fifth version of what we do, this is the only one which got funded, by the way. So the ones before it, it's like a journey of almost 3 years now, which was funded by ourselves while working part-time for the paycheck as well. So now you can say that this has been easier, because now we are fully dedicated to what we are doing, right? So it's really a thing of like, do you really love or to this, to what you do, and you really believe in it to the stage that you'll be willing to do everything and everything to make it happen, but also be willing to mold the idea, because the initial idea changes every time you go to market, as whatever you are thinking is not probably the solution, or it's not even a problem which you're trying to solve. So it's kind of like the trust game, and that's why you need to have a very, very strong team. So that is which comes under test, right? Because it's very hard.
Yeah, I love that. I love the points that you've just rattled out there. I mean, maybe another one is go all in. A lot of my guests have mentioned over the last few weeks that if you don't go all in, then you're going to leave something on the side.
Yeah. I mean, to be honest, you can say that, you know, to go all in for us, for example, has been at some point where literally you can see that in next month, if you don't get anything out, like if you don't have revenue from somewhere or you don't find a job for yourself, you literally have to pay your family and checks and, you know, all of those expenses from somewhere. And you're like literally at that point where you're like looking, either should we stop or should we, you know, just go and find a job or something, or should we continue? And it's like, you know, you always have to try harder.
Yeah, great determination from you guys. And tell me, obviously you've had previous experience working at, you know, different clients or corporates or different companies before you started Hubook. How has those experiences helped you in this venture?
Well, in my case, it has different dimensions. But first of all, the fact that as a consultant, you work with different industries, you can be confronted to different business models. Right. And that's also really, it's a learning experience, because you can see that from how it works internally, each company from a business model, not only from the revenues perspectives, but from the operations perspective. Right. And then when you want to become an entrepreneur, it really helps when you have different perspectives on how to address a market. And then also you get some tools right along the way. You know how to perform quantitative analysis, you know how to perform benchmarking, you are a very fact and data-driven decision taker. So a little bit, just to summarize, it's a little bit key learnings that I'm bringing from the consulting world.
So if you join that together with my background, so for example, how it helped me was, you know, I started in data center as a systems administrator. So that is where you can say, okay, I can set up all of the infrastructure. Then you go into experiences on building e-commerces back in 2011-12. So I know how, you know, online acquiring and cards work and relationships will on setting up those systems. Eventually you work in affiliate marketing and you're building systems like that. So you know how performance marketing works and digital marketing on a technical side and campaign-driven work works. And eventually, if you work for Rocket Internet, you literally know one single rule, that is you always have to win. There is a fail fast, and you have to deliver in 90 days a working product into the market, and you should be, you know, selling on day 90. So for example, whenever we have launched so far, all of our products have been 90 days. So our previous one as well, we launched the expense management tool with a card, MasterCard, and that was live on day 89. So it's I think, and after Rocket, working for like a consulting company in UK, which did digital transformation for, you know, Oinius Oil and Gas and Airbus kind of companies, it shows you how enterprise also works. So that's joining with Ignacio's strategy background. It really helps that we are a team who can do the build. We call it product heavy internally, that we are a product heavy team. So we mostly focus on product, but with data and strategy combined together. So that's really helpful.
Yeah, I mean, some great insights there. And, you know, maybe, you know, let's start talking about, you know, Hubook and the product, kicking off with how the idea came about.
Yes, of course. At the end, as we have been explaining so far, I guess that the idea, it's also the result of a journey as fintech entrepreneurs. And because we've launched different products on the payments ecosystem and the banking ecosystem, what we finally realize is that there is like a second revolution within a fintech ecosystem. 10 years ago, Amazon Web Services was able to disrupt the sector where, in order to launch software, you need to start first by finding some place on your office to put all those servers, and you had to physically build your infrastructure to connect it, to test it, right? And that's everything before you could launch your software on top of that. Amazon Web Services came along and said, that's over, guys. We are going to introduce the concept of infrastructure as a service, right? Nowadays, we've seen how fintechs were starting their businesses, and they were, most of them, struggling at the beginning to find the right partners to integrate with them. They had to undergo with regulatory requirements. They are taking risk. They have to implement compliance teams, onboarding those customers, etc. While corporates that they do not see financial services are their core services, had a little bit the same problem that you had 10 years ago. They had to build by themselves those capabilities as an in-house infrastructure. Our proposal is that we are a banking as a platform service that allows exactly to do what Amazon achieved in the software sector, to achieve it within the financial sector. Because we've been once a fintech, and we knew how hard it was to deploy our services. Now we understand that it's needed a different way of banking as a platform solutions that can help those corporates that they want to enable their customers with fintech capabilities. So at the end, they will be able to offer to their customers a better service. They are able to engage with more loyal customers and also drive a new revenue stream from those financial services. So at the end, Hubook is the result of a journey where we understand that we need to come up with all this knowledge and experiences that Hassan was describing to create that banking as a platform infrastructure that will allow any corporate to deploy those solutions easily without thinking about the infrastructure at all, because we take it from onboarding the customer up to the software itself, where we are also providing a mobile app and dashboard if required by the customer, so they can deploy the solution as fast as possible and start getting, you know, that feedback from the customer and those revenues that I was mentioning.
Just to add on top of that, if you look behind in a little bit 5 years or 10 years ago, apart from AWS or Amazon Web Services, there's another big player called Shopify, you know, and I remember building e-commerce sites and projects for a lot of customers back in the day in 2011-12. And you'll always have to build everything from scratch, and it will take like months, and you're talking to a bank to get, you know, the Stripe wasn't very famous at that point in Europe, at least. And you'll be looking for an online, you know, card payment system to work with the bank and get paid through the cards online and acquiring them. And then Shopify came along. And now, as you can see, literally, if you have an idea, you can just put it out there. You don't even need technical knowledge, and it's like you're live in better half of an afternoon. You're on with a full e-commerce running, payments, everything running, and you can just go and test your idea. You test the hypothesis, and it really scales up. Even though now there are a lot of big clients using Shopify, that's the beauty of it. Like, you don't have to take care of like development resources, you know, all of that hassle. Just go out, a single unit of team or a group of, you know, product team can go out and test an idea. Or if you have an offline business, you can just start selling online. And you can see that in COVID-19 times recently, that there's been a big boost on converting everything which was selling offline physically to online. There's been a requirement. So it's similar to what we believe is going to happen. So nowadays you can see every fintech or every corporate who wants to embed, you know, fintech features in their current offering, which is pretty much needed because literally it provides you the data and the insights on how your customer or your employees are working with your product or your customers are handling your product. So that is similar to what we believe is going to happen, and that's what we're working towards, kind of like provide a single standalone solution where you can, you know, just come have one single contract, go live in 7 weeks, but not just with an API, but actually with a real product working, and have a full team of people working with yourself as an extension of your team to actually make all of that work. And go test your idea. And if it really scales well, then our pricing is pretty much competitive to what a normal fintech will get after integrating with 12 different providers, right? So that's what the value proposition we believe it is in our journey.
Cool. I mean, it sounds like some pretty radical and pretty cool sort of tech that you guys have developed. Can you give us a mini case study of a client and how you help them achieve and acquire those fintech capabilities?
Please, Hassan. I think that so from product perspective, it's also good to hear.
Yeah, sure. Thank you. We have one of our customers who is in the process right now, is going to go live by early October in based in Madrid in Spain. It's an expense management company, and their core business is managing taxes for 40,000 sole traders, freelancers, as you call them, in Spain. And one of the things they were looking for is, okay, we have been doing the business for almost 5-10 years now, but it seems like now there is a possibility to not digitalize those expenses of those taxes and do that from taking a picture, which was typical. You know, you have an app, you take a picture of your expense, that gets digitalized. What if we can add a card or a payment solution which actually does it all the way from the time of the payment to the reconciliation in the cost centers and the ERP system of a tax agent? So that's what we provide them. They reach out to us asking for if we could help them launch that. And not just an API, but actually a full product. So we're like, yeah, sure. And that's what we do. So we did a phased approach with them. What we provide them is not only that we provide them with the card and the accounts and the Spanish IBAN accounts. Because you know, if you're a freelancer, you just don't want to do expenses. You also want to get money in. So we provide all the banking current account with the capability on local level in Spain as well as Europe. But for the Spanish ones, we provide a Spanish IBAN. But apart from all of that, we kind of like took them from the beginning on a journey where we do the onboarding with them. We manage the compliance and onboarding of their customers as well for them. Any issues with the cards are directly coming to our support team. And the process of, you know, going through the MasterCard approval for those designs, getting the manufacturing done, all of that is being done in the background by us while they just had to sign one contract. And in the end, we have deployed them a full iOS and an Android app, which includes, you know, similar capabilities, which N26 or Revolut or Tide, these kind of neobanks already have. It's kind of like a full digital bank already under their own brand, which is, you can call it white label. It's a dedicated instance for them. And it goes live in 7 weeks. So literally from the moment of signing the contract with us, and going live, it will take them 7 weeks with the full product, not just a single API where they'll have to, you know, learn and understand how compliance works, because that is one of the biggest things in fintech, which does not really scale well most of the time, is that you can build a product, you can go live, but once you start onboarding customers, you know, you have to look into the KYC, the anti-money laundering, the different PEP checks and all of those sanctions lists. And that's kind of like a continuous work stream, which we automated for them. So it's kind of like a managed fintech for them. That's what we have provided them. So it's not just a single API. It's one place, one contract, direct relationship. It's kind of like everything managed for them as an extension of their current team. And they didn't have to do any, you know, dedication of in-house development resources to this project as well.
Oh, some really great insight there. And maybe take a step back. You know, you guys mentioned at the top of the show that you've tried out some things that have worked and some things that haven't worked. But what methods or tactics did you use to sort of determine your target buyer initially?
Very quickly, we always tend to try to be very efficient on our actions. So first of all, when any ideation phase, we tend to put those ideas in the hands of the potential customers, right? And from there, we are able to start targeting better our customer based always on their answers. So we really like to hear what our customers say about our product today, but also we like it when potential customers were giving us feedback from our ideas yesterday. So that was for us a very important part of it. So some ideas, of course, they went through the interviews process. Then we came up with a really quickly MVP that we put on the hands of the customers. Then we receive again feedback. And then if once that we have defined the target customer, when we assess the potential market to be captured, that is when we decide if it's worth it to go or not to go to the business opportunity. Because also, as you can understand, as a startup, we have to be really careful about the resources and how we allocate them. So for us, it's very important that once we do a step, it's as informed as possible. Of course, that does not prevent us from failing, which most of them happen, because you try to put all the measures in place. But at the end, when it comes to gaining traction, it comes other variables, right? Not only I am solving a problem, right, for a specific customer or target group that I have identified, but then we have to replicate that sales process. We have to become efficient on how we do online marketing. And then is when also it's a critical part of the proof of concept methodology, where again we try to do this testing methodology, that if we are not convinced again from the result we get, for us we prefer to just put aside an idea that can be a successful idea, but we are not sure, rather than, you know, burn those resources and not be able to pivot, which we tend to do, right? Because at the end, a pivot, we have always seen it like we add on top of our experience and of our customers' feedback a different approach from a similar idea, or we take a previous pivot and then we merge it with a different concept. And that's how we finally got into this banking as a platform, right, infrastructure, because it was the natural result of a previous go-to-market products. I don't know if it makes sense, or maybe I got too long on my answer there.
No, makes complete sense. Yeah, and Hassan, I mean, I know you had something to say as well.
I think it's simple, you know. You have to fail fast, and you always you can say that, okay, you only have to win once, right? So the fail fast thing comes from moving to an idea and not just, you know, doing it on an Excel sheet or on a presentation deck, but actually putting the product or the solution into the market and into the hands of the customers, or at least the prospect, and get some early feedback. And you realize that, you know, as Steve Jobs used to say, you move forward doing things and you can only see the dots connecting backwards. So that's what has happened so far, to be honest and very transparent. We launched an initial idea, which was a very different thing, like high frequency trading system on a crypto market. Didn't work out. It seemed like a good idea from a tech point of view, but I guess there was not a lot of market for it. Moving forward, like, okay, let's try something different. Why not democratize, crypto and MasterCard and put an asset actually as a pair to euro and dollar, and nobody wanted to work in Europe with us from the banking point of view, because that is in 2017, none of the banks was interested in working with crypto. It is still very hard to work with crypto projects because of the unregulated status, right? We went outside Europe. We went to a country called Bahrain, right next to UAE, and it was pretty, the regulator, we worked with the regulator there. Why we went over there? Because it's one of the first regulators to actually regulate crypto and that kind of digital assets. And what we realized over there was actually what we wanted to build, we still needed the infrastructure behind it, which was, there was no PSPs or payment service providers like you have in Europe and US nowadays. None of the banks wanted to work with startups. Every bank wanted to do their own spin-off as a startup of themselves and keep the share of the market. So it wasn't really open. We came back to Spain. All of this was funded by ourselves. We launched different QR payments app because we didn't have the money to actually set up a 100,000 euro, a MasterCard or a Visa bin to actually do the product. We built a QR-based app, which was free, took inspiration from WeChat and Alipay. Apparently realized, okay, in Spain, people are, and Europe actually, people are used to paying with NFC touch and contactless cards. And iWatches and iPhone nowadays, instead of paying with scanning QR codes like in China or Asia or Africa. And that's where we had to still, yet again, okay, it seems like, expense management is something we can do because we are consultants, have issues of our own. Why not, try and do that? And eventually, that is kind of like the journey which we built the expense management tool. That's where we realized the whole banking as a service kind of thing, what everybody talks about nowadays, is kind of broken. And we've seen a recent example of Wirecard going really, really wrong in that case. So that's where we are like, okay, it seems like everybody wants to do fintech, then let's build something which enables everybody to do it. And that's what you can see what happened in travel as well. Nowadays you just go to booking.com and get the best deal, or you go to Skyscanner, you get the best deal. That's what we're looking for. So we work with the best providers in Hoboken. So for example, our processor is done by Marketa. It's used by Uber and Square. We work with a bin issuer, which provides access to local banks in Spain, UK, and France. So we work with a card manufacturer, which works for the biggest banks in Europe. It's kind of like we choose the best pieces, and what we're trying to do is what we have learned so far by building all of these solutions all the way, right? So we are kind of like, you can say, still, we always believe that we are learners. There's always something new to learn. But the journey gives you the experience and you see how it changes.
Yeah, some valuable insight there. And listen, guys, I mean, you've obviously gone through a really, really insightful and really, really interesting journey. But when you knew that Hoboken was the product, was the market wanted the product, as you've just mentioned, how did you then start creating product awareness? And how has this evolved over maybe the months or years since you first sort of knew that there was a market need?
In a sector where we are, where we cannot call it a mass sector, even though our cards can get, in the hands of thousands of customers, at the end, we are a B2B2B or a B2B2C company, right? So our customers, the number of them is not what we can call it a massive market. So to create product awareness there, it's a little bit, well, it's different than just approaching a B2C or a B2B product, right? So from the beginning, it was very clear for us that the word of mouth was an important thing in a sector where, there are not that much number of players. Reputation was very important. So we work on those two axes. First of all, when it comes to word of mouth, we are very attentive to our customer service. So we always tend to say that we do not onboard a customer if we are not sure that we'll be able to serve them with our best of our capabilities and in a really personalized way. Because at the end, that's what our customer seeks. During the sales process, they seek us a consulting service where we help them to figure it out the best use case for their bank accounts, cards, PSD2 capabilities, okay? But then the customer services also reflects that process where we're still working with our customer to understand how they can maximize their banking product, how they can get to more customers, how they can optimize how the cards are used, right? So this is very important for us to create this awareness of the product that this is not just about the product, but it's about how you use it and how you can maximize your services and your revenues from it. And the second part was reputation. We quickly saw how within the market, we have different players, and most of them, they are related to what we call card as a service solutions. So they are poor players that they are going to issue you a card, and most of them are prepaid cards. When it comes to sell these to big corporations, there is a huge problem, which is mean trust. Where is my money here, right? How we solved it that? We are not a card as a service. We are a banking as a platform. It means that we partner with local banks, so we can always attach to our cards local IBANs. It means that the money of a corporation that puts into our cards will be always held by a tier one bank within its own country. And this creates also a lot of trust around our financial products. And this is something that we always like to communicate, that this is not because we are innovating that we have to forget that still we are dealing with a very sensitive thing, which is money, resources, right? And that should be always not only compliant with the regulation, but also to feel that is as secure as possible. And for us, the takeaway was easy. The money has to always stay within a bank, with a well-known bank by our users, so we can guarantee 100% of those deposits too, right? So we work on these two axes for this product awareness. First of all is customer service. Secondly is to ensure that the financial infrastructure is as secure as a bank that you, I'm sure that you know a couple of them, right?
Yeah, that sort of makes complete sense. And I guess you guys would have, at a point in time, as you moving out and looking at maybe expanding and growing your business, looked at various social media or new media platforms to also reach out to your ideal clients. Have you looked at that? And if you have, what type of platforms have you tested?
I think from if you're talking about how we have been trying to reach out to our prospects, one of the biggest platforms, well, everybody knows about is LinkedIn. We as we believe that our prospect is inside a company who is a bigger company, mostly somebody who we'll be talking with is a head of product or a head of marketing. And that's what is our target normally, to reach out to somebody to see what kind of, you know, problems they're facing, if they have something in the roadmap which is interesting, where we can help them in a way to build the product. And that's where initial connection happens. So we are pretty much focused on LinkedIn. And with regards to other acquiring places or networks, would be the Google platform search base, because you know you have that intent of people searching for actually a solution. So there is an intent, an act of intent of actually trying to solve a problem. So that those would be the two main go-to places, I think, where we focus on. That would be because obviously you can do, you know, Instagram and Facebook or Twitter, but for us as a B2B, especially enterprise focused company, LinkedIn and search are really beneficial. I think that's what has worked so far.
Yeah. And if we would like to find also the best of the two worlds, of the online and offline, there are also local communities of companies, fintechs, that the fact that when Hubook can be present there, when we can handle or organize events for those communities, also helps a lot to connect with a highly potential customer, and also helps to interact with them right directly. So we are a company that we see ourselves really close to our customers, and those kind of local communities help us a lot to organize events and create awareness about how we can innovate together. So this is also a way that we use platforms to get our message out there. Yeah.
Those are a few good points. I mean, LinkedIn is definitely the sort of the go-to right now from a B2B perspective. And then on the sales side of things, I mean, well, what challenges are you facing or have you faced with respect to your sales pipeline? Obviously, you know, why I'm asking this, we're in the midst of a pandemic. So it'll be interesting to see if there are sales pipeline challenges or if you're over a hump, how have you got over that hump?
Here we have two aspects. Well, first of all, demand has increased, and this is our perception, because companies that they were seeking to embed fintech capabilities within their products and services, COVID situation made them to boost that roadmap. Why? Because maybe they had time to be more focused within product, because their pipelines have been decreasing. And now they want to get out of this situation with stronger competitive advantage, with a new proposition, with a new initiative. So we are feeling that this demand for embedding finance has been increasing in the last month. The challenge that we find out while we are working with our prospects through the sales process is trust, because everyone knows Deutsche Bank, Barclays, BBVA, VNP. But when it comes to explain to them that they can launch the same debit card with an IBAN capability, then the question comes, how is that possible that you can act as a white label bank, okay, without being a traditional bank? So there it comes where we explain and explore together with our customer our partners, right? And we don't like to hide who is behind our platform. Because when we mention that our processor is Marqeta, which works with Uber and Klarna and N26 and Square, when we mention that the funds are held, as I mentioned it, with local banks, which each of our customers, you know, if we are talking to a customer in France, we can even make a presentation with the banking partner that is going to hold the funds. So we talk about Visa, about MasterCard, and then is where our customer understands that Hubook at the end is, as Hassan described, that technological layer that is able to provide, to act as a white label banking, because behind us, there are more than 10 different partners already that bring those services. So those are the two aspects and how we try to solve them.
Yeah, makes complete sense. It's always good to have trusted partners, obviously, especially in sort of the financial services sector, which, as you mentioned a few times, trust and sort of customer service is at the forefront of all customers' minds. Hassan, did you have anything to add to that from your side of things?
No, I think Ignacio already mentioned, so as you already said as well, you know, in banking and money in general, finance business, it's all about trust and compliance, and that's if that comes with the brand names which have been there for hundreds of years already. So the banks we work with are local. The client knows that the funds are not going to leave the country, and they're backed by a bank guarantee, and everything is compliant. That solves the trust issue and the compliance issue. We do have what you can say a longer sales cycle, as you probably imagine. For us, it's not about, okay, you just go to a website and you buy something. It's more about solution-driven approach. So it's not about just giving an API. It's about having a meeting with the client to understand what the problems they are having, how they have tried to solve them before, how much harder that solution has been for them, the one which they applied earlier, if they have applied any, and how big is the problem for them. And that's when you can actually realize if we are the right partner for them to help them. And the approach to that solution is always tailored. So our sales cycle is pretty longer in that terms, but I think it all comes down to client satisfaction. Although we do have a longer sales cycle, but that means we are providing a solution which is going to be robust, scalable, and secure and profitable in the end, because that is what everybody wants to do in the end, right? So all of these four factors have to come down together to actually provide the right approach. So of course there is a longer sales cycle, but I think it comes down to having pinned down everything and providing a solution for that.
I think you just touched on a very important point there, and that is providing a solution that solves your customers' problems, not just providing a solution out the box. And I think if sales cycles tend to be a bit longer because of that, well, at the back end, you get happy customers and obviously maybe a longer sort of customer life cycle. So I think that's a really, really great way of looking at it. From a sales perspective,
you know, an example I can give you is like when a full bank, which has a history of 100 years, comes to you to ask for a solution to move out a project out of the balance sheet, which they spin off as a spin-off, and it has worked for them so far. But eventually they realize that, you know, it's not compatible with the risk profile of themselves as a bank, and they want to take it out, and they want, you know, more and more advanced features for that project to be having, like virtual cards and physical cards and categorizations and all of that, those features. They come to us. That means that we are actually providing not something which you'd say an MVP kind of solution, but we are providing a solution for the longer term. So of course, you know, everything has some pros and cons, right? So if you want to provide satisfaction and longer term relationship and a good secure solution and robust and scalable one, then the sales cycle has, you cannot, I'd say not a sales cycle, but actually the full, from the moment we have the first touch point to going live and then maintenance, it's kind of like a journey together. And that's what we hope for, that every customer will have at least for 5 to 10 years at least with us. So that's what we look at.
Cool. Makes complete sense. Okay, guys. Tell me, I mean, it sounds like you're doing some really great stuff. You must have some growth plans over the next 6 to 12 months. What are those, and how are you going to achieve them?
Yeah, go ahead, Hassan.
So most of us at Hubook, we are looking for the next stage, which is where we, as I mentioned earlier, I think we are product heavy team. So we look forward to having more, what you can say, a headcount, increase the team size. Why would we do that is because, you know, we want to provide the same SLA or service level which we agreed with customers. And that also is needed because you probably see that we are a small team so far. We are only 13 people right now. But when you work with enterprises, there is, apart from the compliance and you know, the trust factor of working with bigger partners, there is also always a question about, you know, how robust as a company or as a team you are, because, you know, it provides, you know, kind of like nobody's gone wrong with buying from IBM kind of situation. So enterprise level sales means need to have kind of like a structure, and that's what we're looking for. So we look forward to have, although we are EBITDA positive on our current cycle of sales and revenues, we do look forward for another funding round, which we're looking by the end of this year, which will help us, you know, increase that team size to provide more high level SLA for our customers. And also we have recently opened a satellite office in Amsterdam and another one in Berlin. So we are kind of looking forward to providing a local support in each country we operate in Europe. So that's kind of like the next level growth where we are looking forward to.
That's pretty cool and exciting times, no doubt. Obviously, we've gone through various parts of your development and your growth and your journey over the last sort of 30 odd minutes. But what's the biggest tip you can give our listeners who are now building and or optimizing their sales pipeline?
Maybe we are not best to give tips. Because there is still a lot of experience to be gained. Also because we are entering a new sector for us from sales perspective. So we are still learning a lot. But what I may say is that what we're trying to do is always try to get to the bottom of the problem of the customer, but from a really particular perspective. So for instance, if we focus on the vertical expense management, we've seen that our customers within expense management, they have different problems if they are bigger companies or smaller companies, if they serve different kind of customers, how they approach expense management themselves. So we really try to establish different types of companies within a same vertical. And then we start to getting data from each interview that we do. Okay, it's kind of obvious, but once we can leverage enough volume of interviews, we can start to identify some parallels, some common threads among those that convert the best and those who bring more revenue, right? So at the end, how we optimized is that by talking to our customers, we understand how quickly and easily we can serve them, right, in order to drive also value for them, and we can maximize our revenue. But at the end, it's about having a lot of calls, a lot of interactions, always within a specific niche, what I can say, right, a specific vertical that they share common things. And from there, just try to, do some carve out on the data and analyze it further to find those common things. It's not easy to optimize, but at the end is that kind of exercise that we try to do, right? So next time that when we address a customer, for instance, let me explain you one case that happened this morning, okay? This morning I was talking to a customer within expense management vertical, and the customer heard about cards and how they can be used. Well, we sit down together and we try to understand which kind of customers do they have. So then we realize that their customers, they were using basically, or the profile of expense was basically online expense and not on the street expense. So then the offer that we made them was tailored to online expense. So we discussed about the virtual cards, how they can leverage the virtual cards to create more control, subscription, expense management, how they can automatically download invoices from the internet, you see? So the process was optimized because, first of all, we addressed how we can serve you in the best way possible and how we can maximize your business, how we can add your value to your kind of business. And from there, I pull out already a list of things for that category of customer, right? So then it was really easy for them to understand the value and see that we can be a trustable partner to not only deliver fintech capabilities, but also help them, right, to implement those and to see how to maximize for their specific use case. I don't know if that makes sense for optimizing sales pipeline, but at the end, to sum up, that's what we try to do. We are really careful on which battles do we want to play. And we always tend to do that based on data and always keeping in mind that we need to maximize value for our customers.
Yeah, I think that's a really great points. And, you touched on, a few. One stands out is, listening to your customers, as you guys have said throughout this chat, listen to your customers and being able to provide them with relevant solutions that fit their particular problem. And, I think that's a key takeaway for anyone that's that's looking to optimize various parts of their sales pipeline. Listen person and then provide a solution to the problem.
Yeah, and try to have archetypes of your customers. So for each archetype, you already know or you can anticipate their challenges, right? And you can even anticipate future challenges that they will find out in a coming market, right? So there where sometimes we try to set the difference with other suppliers. We try to anticipate future challenges, and that is which is much more appreciated from our offering.
Yeah, it makes complete sense. Listen, it's been really, really great challenge you guys. But before we finish the show, how can people find and connect with you guys and your business?
How they can find us? Well, they can find us on our website, on hubuc.com, hubuc.com. And from there, they will find us, of course, on LinkedIn, on Twitter too. And also they can drop us an email at ignacio@hubuc.com or hassan@hubuc.com. Or they can just, for instance, write me a WhatsApp at my number, which is 0034-685-223-833. So happy to receive also any WhatsApps there. So you see, we try to be really available for our customers, our potential customers anytime, and happy to help, of course, and discuss about how to embed fintech capabilities and so on.
Oh, yeah. By the way, we have a live chat on the website as well. So that goes straight into our Slack team support channel. So there will be definitely always somebody 24/7 reaching out. If not, if nobody answers, we still get a ping on our phone. So we'll definitely answer one of us if nobody's gotten back to you. So hubuc.com, and you can have a live chat as well with the support team for any questions. And that's no problem.
Nice, cool. Guys, really, really enjoyed today's chat and looking forward to seeing you guys go on and become bigger, larger, and make certain you keep on solving problems. It's a great way to look at business. Thanks for sharing your story with us.
Thank you very much, Richard, for having us. It was a pleasure to share all our thoughts on your program. And congratulations for this initiative. And we hope also that you will continue to develop with more and more interesting podcasts like those, because also help us for, you know, the startup community and the founders community to receive insights, right, from very interesting guests. So congrats for that. And thank you also for that opportunity to follow you.
Yeah, awesome, guys.
Thank you.
Speak soon. Cheers.
Cheers. Bye.